It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. In journalist J.B. McKinnon's latest book, he examines what would happen if everyone in the world were to suddenly stop shopping. As it stands to reason, an end to shopping would have huge ramifications on the global economy as we know it. But it would also have a significant impact on our environment and could even impact ourselves and society as a whole. Now, are you an avid shopper? How often do you go shopping? Are you someone who loves retail therapy? What do you get out of buying things, and what would happen from your perspective if people stopped shopping? Could you stop shopping? Call in now at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. J.B. McKinnon joins us now. In addition to being an author, he's an adjunct professor of journalism at the University of British Columbia. His book is called The Day the World Stopped Shopping: How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. JB, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's look at this thought experiment. There, we have one day where everyone decides we're done shopping. What does that look like?
It looks like chaos at first, of course. What we see is change in you know, pretty much everything around us. Certainly in the economy, as we know, slides pretty quickly. Since most of the consumption in the world takes place in the richest countries, we'd see dramatic effects there, but we'd also see the effect of that rippling out across the entire rest of the world, which is where most of their consumer goods are produced these days.
And so how would, I mean, let's look at it, because it would feel like probably from some people's perspective that that would look like a crisis. How would, you know, companies or maybe even governments respond to this, this Sabbath as it is from shopping?
Well, we would see the same kinds of things as we saw in the pandemic, where business and government would do their best to get us back to the malls. And they would do that. Either, you know, in some cases, political leaders will just outright ask us to do that. They will cut stimulus checks to get us to shop. Businesses will lower their prices and create other incentives. You really see in a thought experiment like this just how dependent we are on consumption, on the constant growth of consumption to make our economy function, and also how vulnerable that makes our economy.
And you, I mean, this is the basis of your book. It is a thought experiment. What's the genesis of this thought experiment? Why did you decide to take a deep dive here?
I've been an environmental writer for quite a few years now, and I began to realize that it didn't really matter what particular environmental issue I was looking at. If you dug down to the roots of it, it was probably driven in large part or primarily by the rising rate of consumption that we see around the world, the consumption of goods and services and experiences and the resulting consumption of energy and natural resources. So, but I was also, you know, I realized that we're up against this dilemma where the planet pretty clearly seems to need us to reduce our consumption, but we know that when we do that, it has pretty strong effects on the economy. You know, the economy seems to need us to keep consuming and to keep shopping. The only way I could think of to look past that was to run this thought experiment and play out on the page what would happen if we slowed down our consumption, walk people through the disaster movie portion of that where the economy is collapsing, but then see what might arise out of the ashes in a sense, and what kind of what a lower consuming world might look like and how it might function.
Now, you mentioned just a moment ago that how we would see it in a rich country such as United States or Canada would look very different compared to the places, the poorer countries that actually manufacture these goods. Can you talk just a little bit about that global inequity and how, one, we see it play out right now, and I've kind of hinted to that, and what it would look like?
Sure. I mean, I think I think really the key point here is that most of the consuming is done by the world's wealthy. So that's the wealthy in poorer countries, or it is generally average citizens and wealthier than that in the richer countries. So the first thing we really see is that the responsibility for reducing consumption really rests with the world's most fortunate consumers. But in terms of how it would play out, I mean, here, for example, say we take a look at clothing. We throw out, say we buy 10 pieces of clothing in a year. Most of us will discard 5 or 6 of those in that same year. So we in the wealthier countries could actually cut our clothes shopping in half and our wardrobe wouldn't even change. We'd still have the 5 of 10 articles of clothing that we keep, and we just wouldn't be throwing out 5 or 6 articles of clothing. So for us in the wealthy world, many of us would not, this would be a road bump in terms of our quality of life. But of course, in poorer countries that manufacture a lot of the goods, it would be a much more serious economic crisis.
We are talking to J.B. McKinnon right now. He's a journalist and the author of The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And you can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea that if we suddenly stop shopping, you know, what would we see? Do you shop a lot? Could you reduce your shopping? Call in now, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Now, you visited a number of countries in your book, including Ecuador. How does Ecuador compare to the United States in terms of consumption?
So a lot of your listeners may have heard the statistic that if everyone on Earth had the lifestyle of the average American, we would need 5 planet Earths worth of resources to maintain that lifestyle for everyone on the planet. When I encountered that stat, I thought, well, maybe there's places on Earth where if everyone lived like the average person in country X, then we could get by on the resources we have on the planet right now. And that turns out to be true, of course. And one of those countries at the time that I was doing the research was Ecuador, a small country in South America. So I went down to see what average consumption looks like in Ecuador, and try to imagine what it would be like if everyone in the world was living like that average Ecuadorian. What struck me was that it wasn't as unfamiliar as I might have thought. So, I mean, Ecuadorian life looks, you know, average Ecuadorian life looks very much like the life that many people would remember from the 50s and 60s in America and Canada and Europe, quite livable, just a little bit less of everything, really. So people there are consuming fewer goods, fewer services, fewer experiences. Most people most average Ecuadorians have never or very rarely traveled in an airplane. But until recently, that was normal for people around the world. They're much more likely to be using transit and walking, to own fewer goods, to, you know, it's, I describe it as in the book as looking like the familiar world that we know that has shrunk in the wash.
Now, you know, you're pointing to Ecuador and how it looks similar, but Ecuadorians don't consume as much. So it looks like it could be replicated. Do you think that people could get on board with replicating it, or do you think that it would kind of be like pulling teeth?
It's a really interesting question, because when I was there, I thought for a lot of people would look at Ecuadorian life and say, this looks fine to me. And in fact, I met people, including Americans, who are drawn to places like Ecuador as places to retire because it has this familiar feeling that they remember from their youth. And but I know that other people would look at it and say, you know, this is a total dystopia. I can't live without without international travel. I can't live without flying around the country. It's I think what it really drives home for me is that in order to get to this place where we live with lower consumption, we have to not just look at the individual, but also look at changes we can make in the system that drives and encourages this consumption so much.
We are talking to journalist J.B. McKinnon right now about a thought experiment that is the basis of his book, The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And we want to hear from you. What is your relationship to shopping or consumerism as a whole? Do you think that an end to shopping could have a positive effect, or are you worried about some unintended consequences? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. This is The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. We're talking about what would happen to society, the environment, and ourselves if we all stopped shopping. That's the premise of a new book by our guest, journalist J.B. McKinnon. What do you think about the idea of a society that stops shopping? How do you think this could impact the resources you have? And ask yourself, could you stop shopping? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. And I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Mary in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Well, what do you want to call in and talk about?
Okay. I have basically adopted the lifestyle that he's talking about. Prior to about 10 years ago, I had teenage daughters. So it was recreational for at least 2 weekends a month for us to go to the mall. Well, about 10 years ago, my last kid graduated from college, and I was looking to retirement. And I said, this is enough. I don't need to go to the mall. And in that 10 years, I planned on retiring in 10 years. I instead retired in 5 years because all of my money that was going to clothes and toys and all that sort of things that we buy at the mall, I stopped buying. Instead, I buy my clothes at Goodwill. And if I need something special, I'll order it one thing at all online instead of what I used to do. And in the last 10 years, my bank account has gone from $5,000 to $40,000.
Wow. Mary, thank you so much for sharing that. And JB, as Mary just pointed out, she decided inadvertently to change her lifestyle to be more like the Ecuador example that we just talked about. You know, in part of your conversations for this book, did you hear more people like Mary, people from, you know, the United States, other countries that are starting to get into this mindset?
Yeah, I spoke to people in countries around the world, really, who have moved towards a simpler approach to life. And Mary's point about feeling more financially secure is a really common response, actually. For some reason, I guess we think that if people reduce their consumption, they may feel less materially secure because they're not surrounded by possessions. But in fact, a lot of people end up, they have less debt. They are able in some cases to work less because they don't need to earn as much money for their lifestyle. And so they gain a richness of time in place of possessions. I spoke to people who have practiced these kinds of lifestyles for 20 and 30 years, even longer than that in some cases in the United States. And certainly I would say that there was no indication that their sense of well-being was any worse. And I think overall it was generally better than the average Americans.
You know, part of this conversation and part of the premise of your book is the environmental impact that our consumerism has. And Mary also brought something else up that I think is interesting, that she does a lot of secondhand shopping. She doesn't do a lot of, I'm sure there's a term for it, first owner shopping. She goes to Goodwill to buy her clothes. You know, first, let's talk about, you hit on it a little bit, but can you talk a little bit about just clothing in general? You talked about how much we threw away, but just how much of it across the board goes to waste.
Oh yeah, enormous amounts go to waste. The average garment these days is often being disposed of after just a few wears. So clothing is one of the areas that I think people can often really connect to in terms of shopping and overconsumption, because we've seen, most of us have seen, the durability of clothes decline so much over the last 10, 20 and years and beyond. So what Mary points to is exactly the kind of thing that that we can replace that with. We can work back towards having more durable clothing, buying more of them secondhand. One problem with modern clothing is that it actually doesn't do very well as a secondhand product, because it's so poorly made in many cases that it can't sustain more than one owner. So if we shift towards that kind of a model, you do still have an economy that is, you know, built around better things that last longer and that can be repaired.
We're talking to J.B. McKinnon right now, author of The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. We're talking a little bit about the environmental impact. I want to circle back now to the economic impact, because we talked a little bit about when we have seen a contraction in shopping, usually because of a disaster. Can you talk about the Finnish Depression in the 90s and really what we saw there?
Yeah, the Finnish Depression in the 1990s was really the sharpest economic decline and biggest drop in consumption that we've seen in a, you know, a modern, wealthy Western society. And it was compounded. There was a world depression in the 1990s, but the Finnish Depression was compounded by the collapse of the Soviet Union, which was a big trading partner for them. What's remarkable in the Finnish Depression is that, because Finland is a country that puts a lot of emphasis on equality and equity, there really wasn't, you know, there wasn't what everyone imagines. There wasn't starvation in the streets and, you know, riots and people defending their homes at gunpoint. They managed to redistribute wealth and kind of keep everybody up to an adequate standard of living. But one of the things that a lot of people remember from that time is that there was this depression on, or a suppression, I guess, of conspicuous consumption. So people in the Finnish Depression did not feel that they could show off their wealth. You certainly wouldn't have had any kind of celebrity-based reality TV that was showing off lifestyles of the rich and famous in Finland during the Depression, because public sentiment turned against that. And we saw that in the pandemic as well. I remember one particular, an entertainment executive who was effectively chased off social media for showing himself quarantining on a yacht. And what was interesting about that was that 2 weeks earlier, but prior to the start of the lockdowns and quarantine, I mean, that was the bread and butter of platforms like Instagram, was people posting acts of conspicuous consumption and getting likes for it. So that is one of the things that you do see. If you shift towards a lower consuming type society, then typically you're going to see a shift in social values around how people show their wealth in society.
Well, and sticking with that theme, part of consumerism is that conversation about materialism and how it affects our mental health. You know, how do those two go hand in hand in how we feel about ourselves?
Materialism is a set of values around possessions and income and social status. That's what it is in its simplest term as applied by psychologists. The problem with materialism, maybe I should say the first thing, that the reason that materialism is part of us as human beings is because it's motivating. It helps us get out of bed and try and make our way in the world. It encourages us to try to act to maintain some kind of social standing. It's not there to make us happy. It's 40 years of research into psychology show pretty clearly that materialism does not add to our quality of life. And up to a point, after we've met our basic needs, it's not adding much to our lives. But it's very easy to get caught up in materialism. And it's also materialist values that are pushed most strongly in our society. And so we end up competing with each other, positioning ourselves in order to maintain a sense of dignity in a society in which people are competing around matters like income and possessions.
We are talking to J.B. McKinnon right now about his book, The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And we want to hear from you. What do you think about this idea of stopping shopping? How has it impacted your life? Have you maybe given up shopping for a little bit? How did you feel? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Next, news from NPR and WPR. I'm J. Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm J. Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. Right now, we're talking about shopping, the role it plays in our lives, and what would happen to the economy, the environment, and society as a whole if we stopped shopping, and what it could even do to ourselves. That thought experiment is central to J.B. McKinnon's book, The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And what do you think would happen if everyone in the world stopped shopping? You know, look at yourself. Maybe you go online a lot. I know sometimes I do to buy stuff. What would that look like if you had that time back? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. And I want to go to one of our callers right now. We have Sam in Wauwatosa. Hi, Sam.
Howdy. How's it going?
Well, what do you want to talk about?
Well, it's funny to hear this kind of conversation going on because my wife and I, a few years ago, kind of made the decision to opt out of the consumerist culture. And it's relatively easy for us, but we've actually kind of realized one of the things that keeps us in the consumerist culture is people giving us gifts for, you know, every holiday and birthdays. And we finally just asked everyone that we know to, like, hey, there's organizations that, you know, need donations, Doctors Without Borders, et cetera. Just do that. And the pushback that we're getting from those family members is kind of, I wouldn't have expected it. So it's kind of interesting how the, earlier they were talking about the emotional materialistic connection to consumerism and how people show their care and quote unquote, you know, love by gift giving. So I thought that I'd like to hear the author's opinion and take on that.
Sam, thank you so much for that call. You bring up a really interesting point, which is individual shopping, but also the people that shop around you for you. What do you think of what Sam just shared, JB?
Again, it's a really interesting point. I think one thing it illustrates is the fact that consumerism is how we do everything now. It's how we express our identities. It's how we show our caring and affection for other people. The fact that people, when they have been asked to do something different as a way to show they care, that they actually resist that and are like, no, wait, I want to give stuff, I think reflects the fact that that's what they know how to do. And that's, you know, that's what most of us know how to do in terms of how to manage most things in our lives in a consumer society. The other thing that this raises for me is that one of the things that a lot of the people I spoke to who practice simpler living type approaches, one of the things that they confront that is a challenge is that they feel like outliers. They feel like they are living by a different value set than most of the people in the society around them. And so they end up feeling struggling at times with being mavericks in that society. And that's often one of the biggest downsides to people who choose to live more simply. So you kind of see both of these things expressed here. What I think Sam is pointing towards, this idea that we might show our generosity and our caring by giving to organizations that another person is interested in or reflects their values, I think those are the kinds of things that you would start to see being practiced at a much wider scale if people did make this shift away from materialist type values and towards the kinds of values that are more inherently satisfying.
J.B. McKinnon is our guest right now. He's a journalist and the author of The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And, you know, something that Sam brought up was really interesting, too, because we've been, you know, conditioned for a long time to shop. If we are no longer consumers, let's say we participate in this day or even longer where we decide to stop shopping, who are we?
The first thing we probably are is confused. I talked to psychologists about this. I said, well, you know, if we turn away from materialist values, where do we end up? And they said, well, the first place you end up is a void. You don't really, you don't step from one thing into the other automatically. You have to do some wayfinding in order to figure out what happens next. But this was tested in the pandemic because we did see people cut off at the outset of the pandemic from consumer culture. And it turned out that people were able to make that shift from materialist values into the void and towards a new set of values really rapidly. So we did see people move towards, well, one of the first things people did was start reaching out to their social networks. There was this widespread phenomenon of people reaching out to people they hadn't spoken to in years, or deepening their relationships with people, even though all of this had to be done on video platforms and over the telephone. You saw people engaging in social and environmental activism, in engaging with issues larger than themselves at a very high degree, spending time in the natural world, working on mastering skills. That's a deeply satisfying thing. And we saw people expressing that through the iconic baking of sourdough loaves and many other things. So it was actually really remarkable to see how quickly people were able to turn towards a different set of values and start practicing those. But that was gradually undermined by the consumer economy reorienting itself to the new circumstances of the pandemic. And pretty quickly, a lot of us were back to doing what we know best.
I want to go, JB, to one of our callers right now. We have Mark in Ashland. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
What did you want to talk about?
Very interesting show. I'm really agreeing with the gentleman speaking. But there's a slight catch in the whole logic of the thing. If we stop shopping, if we stop consuming, we will die. We have to go to the grocery store. We have to put boots on our feet in the wintertime. We have to buy fuel. Everything that is pertinent to keeping us alive is shopping. We have to go make money and pay for it.
Mark, thank you so much. Oh, go ahead.
Well, his premise, his idea is basically right on. I mean, all I'm saying is that there's gradations of this thing. And our culture has gone way, way over one side. It's not a one-sided or the other. It's just our culture has gone way over to the materialistic side. And but that is a necessary part of our nature.
Mark, thank you so much for that call. So, you know, the premise of this thought experiment is like a wholesale stop. But are you calling for a wholesale stop in your book?
No, and even in the thought experiment, I'm not calling for a wholesale stop. So, Mark makes the very good point that when we talk about shopping, we talk about it in two different ways. I think of it as one. Sometimes we talk about shopping as like doing the shopping, and I think of that as getting out there and getting your groceries and picking up the essentials and school supplies and things like that. And sometimes we talk about shopping as going shopping, like let's go shopping, more as a recreational type activity where we're choosing non-essentials that we hope will bring some kind of pleasure to our lives. And so even for the purposes of this book, what I talk about is not a 100% slowdown in consumption, because Mark's right, that leads to death, but a 25% slowdown globally is what I look at in the book. And that is nonetheless, that may not sound like an enormous drop, but it certainly is. It was such a big drop as a thought experiment that some people I approached to talk about this thing said, you know, no, I won't even entertain so dramatic a scenario as that. but then the pandemic rolled along and we did see drops close to 25% in quite a few countries around the world.
Now, JB, one thing that I read in the book that's really stuck with me was your example looking at Bergen County in New Jersey, where there is a day every week where people are not allowed to shop. Stores are closed. Can you talk about why that has persisted over the years?
Yeah, Bergen County is really interesting because when I first heard that there was still a county in the United States that still banned shopping on Sundays, I immediately thought, oh, well, that's going to be, I don't know where I pictured it, but I pictured it being out somewhere in the deep rural heartland, you know, far away from the major shopping centers. Turns out it's just across the bridge from Manhattan. And part of the reason that they've maintained this ban on Sunday shopping is because they are a hotspot for consumerism. They have a lot of big box shops and large malls there that New Yorkers drive out to, you know, to get deals and bargains. And they saw early on that if they wanted to have the kind of quality of life that attracted people to that area, they needed to turn that consumer tap off once a week. And this used to be widespread, of course. I mean, there were bans on Sunday shopping throughout the United States. At one point, the United States had really the most Sabbatarian laws of any nation in the world in terms of slowing down shopping on Sundays. And it was taken to the Supreme Court various times, and it was protected not as a religious practice, but as what was described as a special atmosphere that was created by having this Sunday. And it was something appreciated by people from all walks of life. What it gave us, I think, was a weekly window to reorient our values away from the commercial values and the consumerist values and towards other values. And we no longer have that mental break from commercialism in our lives, because we, you know, not only do we have shopping 7 days a week, but we have it in many places throughout the night, on Thanksgiving, on Christmas. And of course, online shopping is available at the touch of our screen at any moment. So we have lost these windows of non-commercial time.
We're talking to JB McKinnon right now about his book, which examines what would happen if we stopped shopping. You can join the conversation right now at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this thought experiment? Have you reduced your shopping? How do you think it'll impact yourself and society as a whole? Call in now, or you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. We're talking to journalist JB McKinnon about his book, The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And we want to hear from from you at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now, JB, we were talking just a moment ago about these days set aside. Just historically, in Bergen County, they still exist where you cannot shop on a Sunday. And you're talking about the history of that. So this is not that remote from us now. Do you think it's something we could maybe return to on a more wide scale?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to imagine from this point, I suppose. But certainly, I could see more communities starting to do this, and it really is important to do as a community. You know, as people who've looked at this history of Sabbaths point out, I mean, we can all choose individually to have a day that we don't shop, and you know, whether we choose to use it for spiritual practice or going out into the natural world or just spending time with people we care about. We can all choose to do that as individuals, but it's very difficult to actually do, because if we all choose our own day that we stop shopping, then we never, you know, everyone has a different day, and you might find that you want to be gathering with people on that day, and three quarters of them are working. And so back when whole communities did this, you know, everyone would be not working, not shopping. There would be a total community atmosphere of non-commercialism, and that really allowed people to go to a different place in terms of the values they express on that day.
So it's 2021. You know, we just had this recent report come out that climate change is really at this kind of level red. So let's look at how consumerism does play a role in what we're seeing environmentally. Before you said that you're not calling on people to wholesale stop shopping, but that overall maybe reducing it by 25% could have a really big impact. What could we see if we could, across the board, reduce our consumption by that much?
Well, I would be even gentler than that. I would say if we could reduce it by 1% to begin with, it would have an extraordinary result. I mean, if you consider the fact that we have yet to reduce carbon emissions at a global scale in even a single year through the pursuit of green technologies and cleaner energy and so on, we have never yet managed to do that. But each time that consumption slows down globally, we do see an actual reduction in carbon emissions. We saw it again in the pandemic when consumer culture slowed down. We saw the sharpest drop in carbon emissions recorded in history. So we know that consumption, if we reduce consumption even slightly, we would immediately accomplish what we have yet to do through green tech and clean energy at a global scale. It's that powerful a lever, and it would have the same kind of effect on just about any other environmental issue you care to name.
So let's say this happens, not to use this term, but there would need to really be buy-in. And because we've been talking a lot about the economy, could we see that, given that these two things really do intersect, the economy and the environment?
I mean, I think we can. We can see it. We can approach this in the same way that we've been approaching the greening of the consumer economy. It can be incremental, and it can be it can involve changes that we make in the system. So I think to loop back to an idea that, you know, often comes up and came up on this program as well, this idea of moving away from disposability and towards durability of goods, there's concrete things we can do to make that happen. We can, you know, as President Biden has begun to talk about some kind of right to repair legislation, you know, mandating that products be more repairable than they are today. We can change taxation so that buying new goods costs considerably more than buying used goods. And that would drive more companies to recapture their goods and sell them secondhand, which is a thing, again, that used to happen in the past. There are all these sorts of approaches we can take from those sorts of smaller scale changes to things like dealing with income inequality, which is a big driver of consumerism.
We're talking to J.B. McKinnon right now, a journalist and author of The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. And J.B., I want to put you on the spot a little bit. You wrote this book. Have you done any of this sort of shopping reduction in your own life?
Yeah, I mean, two things that I guess really captured me out of this. One was this idea of fewer, better things. So I have been turning more towards spending a little more on things that I do buy, but looking for those things to last longer and to stick with me for years, I hope. But the other thing that I've really learned from this was that it's a lot easier to move towards this simpler kind of approach to consumption if you don't focus on what you give up. So if I think a lot of the times we think, well, if we slow down our shopping or consumption, it's a sacrifice. We're sacrificing this, we're sacrificing that, these things that we wouldn't buy or wouldn't get to do. The way that it works best, talking to people who've practiced this for a long time, is to look at what you gain. So I think more about how can I gain more free time? How can I will invest more time and energy into spending good quality time with people I care about. And the end result of that will be that I consume less because I'm using my time differently. Those are the sorts of things that I think allow you to make these kinds of changes and really find it satisfying to do so.
Now, you've written this book about shopping. In the past, you've written about more sustainable local eating. What's next? What has captured your interest?
I don't know. I feel like this was the big one. I mean, I've been working through these books, kind of how to eat. I have another book called The Once and Future World that's about, you know, how was me trying to figure out how to relate to the natural world and to non-human species. But, you know, I think it all pointed this way. So for now, I'm just really enjoying engaging in this conversation. It's a conversation that really hasn't been happening in the public sphere for the last 20 years. It's overdue that we put consumption and consumerism at the heart of our conversation around sustainability. And that's the place that I want to be talking and thinking and writing right now.
Well, JB, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a lot of fun.
Pleasure. Thanks so much.
J.B. McKinnon is a journalist and adjunct professor of journalism at the University of British Columbia. He joined us to talk about his book, The Day the World Stopped Shopping, How Ending Consumerism Saves the Environment and Ourselves. I'm J. Carlisle Larson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.